hackers.
Right. It could be anybody. And look, there is, you know, on both sides, there is heightened awareness and concern about this. You have Donald Trump talking about rigged elections. And then on the other hand, you have Democrats like Harry Reid, who wrote a letter to FBI Director Comey yesterday after my piece, raising concerns about Russian tampering and given the associations that people in the Trump campaign have had with Russia. Paul Manafort, of course, was in business with pro-Putin oligarchs. Mike Flynn, the general, retired general, had flown over to Moscow for the 10th anniversary celebration of RT and was paid for it. So there's been multiple
an advisor to Donald Trump. And you have Donald Trump talking about rigged elections. On the other hand, what was your response to him calling on Russia to hack Hillary Clinton's emails?
Yeah, well, clearly that got a lot of attention and seemed way over the top. Of course, he said he was only being sarcastic and shouldn't be taken seriously. But I think, look, you know, can the Russians actually launch a full-scale cyber attack and influence the election? You know, probably not. As I mentioned, there are points of vulnerability, but it would take a lot, given that elections are state and local affairs, and there's a lot of points of entry, and it would be a huge undertaking. But even if they could do a little bit, do something like what they did, like
Michael the tampering Esikoff, with we're elections. Michael Esikoff, we're going to have to leave it there. Chief Investigator Carson. Responder for Yahoo News. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about the astounding weirdness and unbelievable strangeness of our political times.
In 1964, a handful of determined classical music and jazz enthusiasts put their passion and engineering skills together to create Portland, Oregon's first community radio station. 4 years later, in 1968, KBOO was born. After 48 years, KBOO Community Radio is still very much a thriving media hub for Portland and beyond. 2018 will mark 50 years, and KBOO is planning a long line of celebrations now. We need your help. Our top four goals to get started are fundraising, Oregon Historical Society exhibit building, sharing stories in history, and events in celebration. For more information, contact volunteer at kboo.org or Armando Gonzalez at mandosmundo@yahoo.com. We look forward to your help.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in September include The Problem with Privilege, Direct Action Organizing, and Decoding Plants, Seeing Urban Flora with New Eyes. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Join KBOO Community Radio at Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, September the 8th for United We Stand Up, a comedy show and a benefit for KBOO. I'm T6 and I'll be your host that night, which will feature local comedians like Betty Lungen, Bree Pruitt, Adam Potsey, Brandy Morgan, Belinda Giles, Noriko Ott, and Debbie Wooten. Raffles, refreshments, and good times for all. Again, that's United We Stand Up, Thursday, September the 8th, at Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Doors at 6:30, showcase at 7:30. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Oh, beautiful, oh, spacious skies.
America. That was Frank Zappa, believe it or not. Catherine Lee Bates wrote America, the beautiful, the wonderful, the marvelous, 1895. So we're in an ironic time, and I'm feeling very ironic. And Steve, our incredible interlocutor, power man on the engineering side, the guy who you talk to before you talk to us on the air, he's going to go away. He's going to leave. He's quitting. He's just walking out the door. The salary wasn't high enough. Isn't that the truth, Steve? The money wasn't good.
There is no money in community radio.
What? What? Why am I here? What has happened?
Because you love it.
Oh, no. I don't know. Okay. I'm in a crisis, and you're getting to experience it. All of you out there in Radio Land, this is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Wisely is not here. It's just me, and the number to call is 231-8187. Here's what I want to do. I know that this becomes almost like a ritual of flailing and whipping and crying, but I want to talk about the Trump thing. And I think I'm going to call this show Trump-O-Rama. And I want to point out that when you have a crazy person who is running for president, who has no experience in government, who is all about making deals and going broke, and then coming out ahead in that process, you've got a potential problem. But nobody, I think, really appreciated the fact, first of all, that Trump would end up the candidate of the second major party, the Republican Party, or that Stephen K. Bannon of the Breitbart News Service would be joining him to manage his campaign, and that, in fact, Kellyanne Conway would become his press person. She's so sweet. She's so clever. Really very brilliant woman. And that this combination, together with the what is now called the alternate right, which is, you know, everything from the Ku Klux Klan to Breitbart News, to even people like the Koch brothers, who are not enthusiastic about Trump, all of whom are kind of massing on the right. And this is happening not based on any rational discourse, not based on any really coherent argument. Remember when there was an attempt to create the Obamacare, this crazy crowd of what came known as the Tea Partiers, stirred up a lot by anti-immigrant sentiment, by Americans for Prosperity, which is kind of a Koch brothers thing. All of that showed up in Portland and elsewhere, every place in the nation, in fact. I went to a meeting at Emanuel Hospital. No, actually it was, doesn't matter. I went to a meeting in one of the hospitals. And to my amazement, the hall was filled with people, some of them having huge signs of with Obama with a little Hitler mustache. Many of them outraged, unwilling to allow the senator to talk there. We were at that moment seeing the birth of something very, very weird, very massive, and potentially very fascistic. The argument then was, keep your hands off my Social Security, keep your hands off my Medicare, none of which, of course, was threatened by the Obama plan. In fact, sadly, what should have happened, what could have happened, and what would have happened if we had been a rational culture would have been to create a national health plan, which would have been modeled on the VA and or on Social Security systems and Medicare, Medicaid. And it would have been free choice doctoring and so on. It would have been good general insurance, but it would have cut out the insurance industry. And it would have cut out the pharmaceutical industry, because the way pharmaceuticals would be purchased would be based on contracts that would be made the way the VA does. Now, a lot of people criticize the VA, and there are a lot of reasons to criticize it, but that's not my point. My point is the larger one. We could have had, should have had, finally, some kind of national health care delivery system. What we've got now is a patchwork, which is subject to all kinds of weirdnesses. I recently encountered the need for an antibiotic that costs, a brand new antibiotic, costs $1,000 for a 2-week supply. With much argument, it was cut down to $150. When I called the company and said, what the deal here? They said, well, if you're on Social Security and so on, we charge you a lot more. Why? Don't know. But you can apply for a discount. All you have to do is fill out a form. And I said, oh, yeah, send me the form. The form asks for my Social Security number. It asks for my tax records. It asks for all kinds of things so that I can maybe, and it's unclear what the criteria are, maybe, and that's important, get a discount on this incredibly expensive antibiotic, which is expensive because it can be. So in this world of where we don't care about health so much as we care about profit, where the drug industry is so dominant in healthcare, this is what's going on. Now, I don't bring that up so you can call me up and tell me about how horrible your health care experience is, but you're welcome to do that. I'm bringing this up to suggest that things, as they grow more and more weird, cause people to become disconnected. And that disconnection leads inevitably, I think, to a sort of fascist mindset. And again, I think people understand fascism, but it's basically a corporate state. It's the notion that a merger of capital and capitalism with government is the most efficient way to deliver goods and services to the people. And this is also accompanied by a huge amount of nationalism, a very aggressive foreign policy, a set of assumptions about going it alone, which brings us in turn to Donald Trump and to his enormous support early on for the Brexit, the exit of Great Britain from the European Union, and his bringing, and this is so amazing, bring to his meeting in the South, I actually couldn't believe it, Nigel Farage, who is a plummy-voiced English guy who supported the Brexit and who is advocating for it in the United States. Weird, weird stuff. Meanwhile, Trump has hired the head of Breitbart News. You probably all know this, but it's really important. As his chief executive, Stephen K. Bannon, and has, on the other hand, on the softer side, as his press person, Kellyanne Conway, who cleverly doesn't answer questions and says it's all in transition and is maybe responsible for Trump's kind of stepping away from his building a wall and kicking 11 million or whatever it is, persons of Hispanic heritage out of the country. So what I would like to do today is have you, all you out there, give me examples of the wonder of Trump, the good things, of course, that he has done, the bad things, of course, that he has done, what it all means, how this is playing out. Am I right in my maybe paranoid view, and I don't think it's paranoid, but my paranoid view that we are moving into, I've often talked about this, but it's important to understand, late stage capitalism, which is kind of early stage fascism. And I think this is so important that I'm willing to devote this show to it, and I would love to hear from you. I hope you out there can give us examples or counterexamples, for that matter, of what's going on what used to be the Republican Party, which has always, in my mind, been kind of right-wing outlier, but has elected several presidents of the United States. You know, look at Reagan, look at Nixon. Nixon's a wonderful example. So here we are with this situation. And that speech in Jackson, Mississippi, where Nigel, I love that name, Nigel was brought home to America to advocate for Brexit for us, sort of. All of that is part and parcel of something which I thought of as kind of an outlier, but now think of as far more of a conspiracy, which is getting the name the alternate right. But it includes people who even don't agree with the Trump. It includes the Koch brothers, the Americans for Prosperity. It includes definitely Breitbart News. Now, you remember Breitbart News. They were the ones who set up Planned Parenthood and other groups to knock them off with very cleverly planned, sleazy, fake news stories. And they often run huge stories. They have a large visitor population. They're very successful on the right. And they're fueling what is basically a deep know-nothing philosophy that I think will not probably prevail in this election, but has the potential to build a right-wing force of some significance. And I wanted to hear from you. I wanted examples of the Trump world and examples of what you think is going on and why you think it's happening. And I hew to a kind of Marxist analysis in which I see a huge lumpen proletariat, a huge number of people who are disconnected from their actual class roots and are connected very much to a sense of nationalist outrage. And this nationalist outrage is vast and, I'm afraid, fairly deep. So let's talk about this. Let me hear from you. 231-8187. Jane, you're on the air. Jane?
Oh, thank you so much for caring passionately about truth, love, principle, and justice. And I want to say a few insights about Trump that maybe I don't hear other people reading or saying or writing. And that is that the Trump and Clinton daughters have been close friends. The families not just have been together to bribe and manipulate each other, and get bribes from each other, but also to work out strategies that very few people would vote for Hillary if they knew the facts about her. So you need to have a worse evil for you to choose her over. And at the same time, there needs to be lots of excitement to get people to give money to and volunteer for the different parties in opposition to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're before, and it's their own platform, but outside the personality of the other person. It's kind of a win-win, and the Koch brothers actually want Clinton to win, because if you have things too overt and too extreme, it kind of exposes the belly of all the pretensions of fascism that our government is, and our society is even more and more and more becoming. And I wanted to say that a lot of folks that I know very are passionately for Trump, and I ask them why, you know, what do they think would be better, what could you do differently, and they have no idea. They just have been taught to hate and fear Hillary, and they don't even know how bad she really is, and how awful it really would be, but they don't understand some of the same things they don't like, of bullying, of dishonesty, of corruption, of laziness, of insensitivity to others, of dismissal of human lives, of letting other people be impoverished, suffer disease, injury, death, for one's own gain, is what they both do. One is smooth, one does it to millions, one does it just to their employees or their neighbors.
No, I think your points are all valid. I want to give others an opportunity. I really appreciate your comments, though.
But I think what we need to do in talking with folks is acknowledge their need for safety and for hope and for justice and for feeling good about themselves, and give them a way to do that without having contempt for how ignorant they are and how even dumb. And we can be very active in saying if they want a woman president or if they want something different from the status quo, which Hillary and Trump are, then tell them why Jill Stein is so much better. And in addressing the concern about false and cheated and elections, just have the paper ballot and have open software. Everyone can see that we own the software that counts the votes, records the votes, and we own the paper ballots on which the votes are counted and secure those.
Well, I agree with you on the other complaints. I agree with you on the paper ballot. I'm going to give someone else a chance. I thank you for the call. You know, this is an interesting race in a lot of ways. And it is, as one dissects it, one sees all of the odd elements that make up national American politics, including the deliberate effort by the Supreme Court and others to disenfranchise certain communities, particularly communities of color. Meanwhile, Trump is really the archetypal hero for a large number of people who are alienated and disengaged. And part of that is about how it's funny. That is, people will actually vote for this guy because they're amused by the distress he's causing to what they perceive as the establishment. And I think that's a key factor, and I think that needs to be discussed a lot more. It is an odd phenomenon. The fact that, in fact, this guy, who is not really that successful a business person, very good at going broke and coming out ahead, this guy, this realty guy, has risen to the place of prominence through the interest of largely of popular media, largely, by the way, by NBC, creating shows in which he gets to fire people. He asks people to do absolutely meaningless tasks and then evaluates those tasks as if they had meaning and then lets people go. He made a transition from so-called ordinary persons looking for jobs with Trump to people who are more or less media known people. So you had the Trump, you know, the Trump all-stars, as it were, the Trump celebrities. And this went on for, what, 11 years? So he built a base of popular support for the notion of his cruelty as a cool concept in American business. And that is really kind of an opportunity to identify if you're angry and you're unhappy with things and you're disenfranchised and you don't have the job you would have fantasized that you would have or the career you wanted. This is the opportunity to get back. And that's that means that you don't have to know his politics. You don't have to care about what he would really do if he had the wisdom to do it. And by the way, one of the most challenging and interesting things about Donald Trump is, by his own admission, he doesn't read anything. According to the guy who co-wrote his autobiography, The Art of the Deal, he doesn't sit still for 5 minutes. He's not teachable. He doesn't care. He just moves right along. And that is a large part of the American populace is in that position, an impatient, angry, disappointed, disenfranchised population, particularly of white men, who really are a force to be reckoned with in what I see as an oncoming rush of totalitarianism, particularly nationalism, racism, anti-women sentiment, I mean, xenophobia, you name it. And it's all really happening. And I wonder how we, you and I, ought to be responding to that. I know one popular response I hear from a lot of people is to support the Green Party candidate. Others want the conservative candidate. The Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, is interesting. What is also interesting and becomes increasingly obvious in American politics in the last many years is that these candidacies are, in essence, outliers that have no real impact in the process. What made Bernie Sanders so interesting is that he struggled within the confines of the Democratic Party and really did challenge and did produce some changes, some liberalizations, and moves to the left, as it were, in the Democratic Party. Stein, not so much. The conservative guy not having that much effect on the Republican Party. It's weird, and it's scary, and it's not unexpected if you really think things through. But I want to hear from you. I want to get your sense of what you think is happening. Remember that when the guy who ran Breitbart, and I remember Breitbart News is kind of lying news, as Trump would say, lying Hillary, lying news. Stephen Bannon, Breitbart News head, takes over the role of being Trump's executive producer, as it were. Meanwhile, on the press side, Kellyanne Conway is hired, and she's charming, and she's bright, and she's opportunistic, and she absolutely fits the mold. And by the fact that she is a woman, that she makes an attractive presentation, is disarming in the face of Trump's absolute disregard for the legitimacy of half of the people of the nation. And it's really, really amazing. And I find that we are at this point, all of us, tending to write him off, that is, write Trump off. I'm not sure. I'm not sure at all that we understand what's going on, and we don't know what is in the embarrassing closet of people who are considering Trump but don't want to acknowledge it when they're asked by a polling group. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Theodore.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You know, I just find your premise ridiculous because Obama is and Bush were truly the fascists.
Ah.
I mean, they meet the deal where your measurement by which they are going out and they've got 700 bases and they're out there bombing wedding parties and stuff like that, and Trump didn't want it. Now, he didn't say it vociferously, but because he's got to couch stuff politically correct when you're doing business with people. But you've got invalid arguments. Here's another invalid argument. And by the way, I'm going to the Trump rally today in Everett. I'm about to go up to Seattle, but on business. But I'm going to go to that thing.
Okay.
But you know, people like you and Joe, I like you listening to you and stuff. But you know, I've got friends that are teachers, and they think that a 1% failure rate on a business, if you got 400 or 500 companies that you formed over 30 years, they think that if four of them went bust, that that's a bad record. That is ridiculous. That's an incredibly good record. And so you don't have any validity. And you say that the guy's not wealthy. He supposedly got $4 or $5 billion. I think by any measurement of anybody on the West Coast, other than Bezos and that ripoff at Microsoft, he's doing pretty well.
Well, let me ask you this. I understand your argument, and we're obviously on different sides on this question, but he has not yet shown with any documentation exactly what his wealth and what his tax status is. Why? What?
Why does that matter? Why does it
matter? You brought up the idea that he was a billionaire. I didn't bring it up.
You said that he's not as wealthy. I'm just saying it appears he's worth probably $3, 4, or $5 billion.
Why do you believe that?
Why doesn't matter?
Wait a minute. Let's go back to this. You're saying it matters because I'm wrong, and I'm saying to you,
he's got a lot of license income.
Well. Why
he does have his own 757?
No,
right there's $200 million.
No. Wait a minute. He's leased the plane, first of all.
Second, I don't think it's leased. I think it's owned.
Well, even if it were owned, I don't know how much money the guy has. You don't know how much money the guy has.
No, I don't. No.
Well, you believe, as many people do, that this is a very successful billionaire. And he presents himself in that way. But there's no evidence. Well, let me finish. There's no evidence to support that. None.
Okay, but in the end, it's insignificant if you are running against a fascist police state.
Ah, I see.
Like Hillary and Obama.
So essentially, your argument is, let me just see if I'm fairly summarizing your position. Your argument is that, in fact, the real fascists are people like Obama, and that Trump is the outlier. In this,
Bush, Obama, Hillary, you're absolutely right. Trump is the outlier. I remember 16 years ago, I was at the Pat Buchanan thing, a small luncheon with Pat Buchanan down in the Governor Hotel.
Uh-huh.
And Trump basically wanted a 10% tax on wealthy people to pay off the deficit. And I thought that was a pretty good idea because it would be minimally, it'd weigh on them minimally. So he is not the fascist. The guys that you, I'm not saying that you push Hillary, but the tendency is the lefties and the Bushies are the ones that are the fascists. They're the ones that are in bed with the big corporations. I mean, how many hundreds of millions of dollars did Hillary take from fascist regimes and regimes that cut clitorises off and stuff like that?
Okay,
a lot.
Well, I think you've raised some strong points. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to continue with the conversation with others. And I appreciate the fact that we are getting opinion like yours. I do not obviously share it, but I think it's important. And again, thank you for the call. 231-8187. Camilo.
Camilo.
Hi, Camilo. How are you?
I want to make a few points. I'm well, and good to hear you again. But I think it's a mistake to focus on Trump. I even think it's a mistake to focus on this election. I want to reference a couple of broadcasts. One is your excellent broadcast on End Stage Capitalism a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is the recent one with Robert Reich and Chris Hedges on Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Hedges in that discussion made the point that the personalities in this race should not be the issue. It's the underlying system that you have referenced in your introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to understand that, I strongly recommend that everybody get a hold of a copy of Chris Hedges' The Wages of Rebellion. This will help you understand the underlying processes that are represented in this election, but really are less important than the systemic issues that are occurring underneath. And what has to change is the belief that some kind of reform can change the outcome. I mean, I don't think there's going to be any significant difference whether Trump or Hillary is elected.
That's interesting.
I think I'm a lifelong Democrat. just recently changed my party designation to green, and I'm 74 years old. I've been at this for 50 years. So, I mean, I think I actually would rather see Trump elected than Hillary, because with Hillary, you get a deception. And essentially, they're all the same, trying to save the system for capitalism. That's what Roosevelt gave us. Despite all the wonderful things in the New Deal, he saved the capitalist system. And we're just in a struggle with it. It's going to fail. We don't know when. We don't know how. But the underlying conditions are ripe. And what we have to do is to not expect that we're going to save the system through some kind of reform and change the language and the expectations that we have, and realize that profound revolutionary change is the only thing that's going to make a difference.
Okay. I think that your point is a very interesting one. I think that I don't know an answer to it. I am not ready to challenge the idea that we need a fundamental revolutionary change in the economy and in the system. But I really appreciate your comments, and I don't have an answer. I see only down the road a kind of disastrous a world crisis coming out of the environmental crisis, which much of the world is in denial of, particularly the U.S. Congress. And, of course, the fact that there are growing tendencies toward fascism all over, particularly in Europe. I mean, when women are being told they can't cover their bodies at the beach, which is kind of the obverse of the old business of being told, women being told that they can't reveal their bodies at the beach. All the irony of that just blows my mind.
I just want to end with saying I agree with you that there really is no answer, but I think there's one choice that we can make.
Okay.
And that is to decide how we are going to behave, what kind of values are we going to represent as this change occurs. And it's got to be just, it's got to be peaceful, and it's got to be decent and humane.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that. The specifics of where we might split. I am not an enthusiastic supporter of any of the candidates right now running for president. I'm focusing right now on Trump because I see him personally. I see him as the spearhead of a kind of Hitlerian, not Nazism, but fascism.
That may be true, but I think chances are he's not really running to win the election, but to win the media contest.
Well, that's, yeah, I think that's probably true to a great extent. Thank you very much for the call, man.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. 231-8187. We're talking about the Trumpism, the funny Trump, the alternate left, the Breitbart community, the fact that the head of Breitbart News has now become the head of the Trump campaign, and that Stephen Bannon has a famous, really a notorious, I think I'd say, reputation for a certain kind of distorted news broadcasting. And also that so many, 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 many people believe that. I go to the Saturday market. And I buy excellent lamb from a guy who's really always been a very strong right-wing guy. And he is like many, many people who recite the line, Lion Hillary, as if that somehow is an expression of a politic. That, to me, is a very naive position. I'm not going to say Hillary does or doesn't lie. That's not even the point. The question really is, on this level, and it's a very petty level in a way, who's competent to operate the vast machinery, the huge bureaucracies that constitute the government? That is not, looking at it in that way does not give us any sense of change. I am not happy with American foreign policy. I spent some time now on the air talking about the evil of Wahhabi Islam, as opposed to Islam, the religion, and of the role of Saudi Arabia, which we support so many ways, and a similar kind of role that Israel plays in a much smaller sphere, but we've seen Israel evolve its government from a social democratic one to one that is extremely oppressive. All of this I see in the context of the rise of this, what I call the alternate right. Other people call it that as well. And when I see a European Brexit person being presented by Trump in Mississippi, I say, well, aha, there's something else going on here. And I have to stop for a minute to do some business. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio here, part two of Ralph Nader speaking on progressive matters. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the latest attack against the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And we hear about VotePact.org, which presents a unique alternative to those wanting to break out of the traditional two-party rut. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. You should do it more. Not a current member, you can become one. Just go online, you know, kbo.com, kbofm.com. I mean, it's really easy. .org, not com, .org. And right away you get an opportunity to contribute some money. If you like the station, I really like the music on this station more than anything else, that and Amy. And I think it's worth supporting as much as you can afford. 231-8187, we're talking about the Trump-a-bump. Who do we got? Jeremy, you call often. How are you?
I call often in spurts.
Go ahead, man.
Anyway, I think it's if you're going to be the fascist compared to Trump, I think the correct one is Mussolini, because of his sort of left wing origins. I mean, it wasn't really, he didn't bother with the futurists. He would show up driving 100 miles an hour, which is hard to do in those days, in a car, jump out with a book in one hand, a revolver in the other, and say, tu vile libretto fascisti perfetto. A gun and a book make a perfect fascist. And then you take off at 150 miles an hour. I'm now thinking that might not have been him, that might have been Marinetti, who he was involved with. The point I'm getting to is that Trump's passion in college, I don't know if it was his major, he was an actor. He was a lifelong Democrat, as far as I know. When Spy magazine, the late great Spy magazine, used to make fun of him in the mid to late 80s, they referred to him as a six-fingered troglodyte. Mm. And they showed him.
They didn't accuse him of having small hands. That's a joke, Jeremy.
They made fun of his fat fingers on small hands. Anyway, but he was pro-abortion. And I think most of what he's doing, you know, he doesn't care about anything. I don't think he expected the nomination, and I don't think he expects to win it. It's just another part of his branding process.
Yeah, I agree. But that doesn't mean that he's not a...
That doesn't mean that those Nazis online, you know, the alt-right community, aren't real terrifying. But are they any more terrifying? I mean, Reagan actually... addressed WACL, the wonderfully named WACL, World Anti-Communist League, and there were people in Nazi uniforms while he gave an address while he was running for president. So Trump hasn't done anything like that. He's kind of close with David Duke and all, but he's never done anything that grotesque. And, you know, Reagan, I don't know what Reagan was doing. Reagan, I think, might have been a true believer. I think Reagan actually wanted Armageddon, and then he figured he'd get the express train to Exodus. While you know the rest of the world burns.
Yeah, I don't agree.
Own the voting machines anywhere they do, but you know, unless they do.
Jeremy, I have to let you go. You violated the fundamental rule of language, and I think I dumped you. You've done this. This is the second time you've done this. You need to heed the rules. We don't make them; the FCC does. And I think I caught your comment before it went on the air. Anyway, let's go on to the next caller, 231-8187. Sean, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I promise I won't say any of those words.
Please.
And you caught me off guard because I think somebody was ahead of me and maybe they hung up. But anyway, so, it's funny because I agree with Camillo, the previous caller.
Uh-huh.
which was kind of was already in my head when I first heard you were going to focus on Trump again.
Yeah, it's my addiction of the time.
I agree. I just don't know. And you just kind of contradicted yourself agreeing with Jeremy in terms of that, you know, Trump was an actor and that's what he does and that's who he is and so forth. And
uh-huh.
Agreed. And so I kind of... A comment is then why, if that's what he's all about, is just he's an attention hoover. You know, it's even though Hillary Clinton is getting more attention, so-called, because of the Clinton Foundation and so forth.
Right.
For the most part, the complaint has always been the press is given much more to Donald than, you know, to just about anybody else. And I think that whole argument about, you know, maybe the best thing to do that you could do is to not give them attention, just like the press or the media, you know, want to hound on a certain subject because they want the public to focus on it and be distracted by it.
Well, one thing that is important about the media in general is they want people to listen or watch. That's really what they want. I think they're ideologically bereft of any great concern, except overarchingly, they're capitalists.
Right. But what's funny about the fellow that called who was going to the Trump rally up in Washington
uh-huh.
is that, you know, his so-called complaint is that, you know, where Trump is trying to fight this fascist thing that the lefties, I love that the lefties have supported,
mm-hmm.
and Bush, is that hasn't Donald Trump benefited under this long-term fascist so-called regime that we've been living under?
Well.
You know, so that's just kind of throwing that out. But real quickly, I just want to finish with a comment that way back in the history of China is that, you know, they went back and forth about whether to support the simple monopolies that they were making a lot of money to wage their wars through the money that they made off of salt. This is a great little piece of information. It's great read out of Mark Kalansky's book on the history of salt.
Uh-huh.
And it just basically brings up how historically this goes on and on just in its own times. And that is the argument between the Confucianists and the legalists about whether or not government should be run by morality or whether it should be run by monopoly.
Mm.
Raise money to wage war and so forth. And basically that just that the way that they believed the legalist was that people should be controlled by fear of punishment and that the state will get rich and the army strong, and that allows to succeed in establishing hegemony over the states. And, you know, that's essentially what is happening now, and even to a larger degree.
Hmm.
And I just want to finish by saying I agree, so to speak, with you. If you believe that it's getting worse and we're running more into fascism, that's been going on since Sacco and Vanzetti were, you know, illegal or, you know, Italian immigrants who were sentenced to death for a murder they didn't commit,
mm-hmm.
to everything to I don't want to say charmer. Anyway, since, you know, the industrialists threatened after FDR that they were going to take over basically essentials of government, you know, since FDR. And I see that happening ever since. So
okay.
I don't think Donald Trump is anything different beyond what's been going on for, you know, the last 100 years, let's say.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it and the comments. I do want to add one thing, which is that why Trump is unique beyond all of this is the peculiar charisma he seems to carry and the fact that he doesn't know anything. I have never, ever, ever encountered a person who is seriously running for a major office, who is a nominee of a major party, who apparently has never read anything, doesn't know the Constitution, doesn't know the structure of government, doesn't know anything about American history. Doesn't know the Bible. Doesn't know the Bible. My goodness. And yet has the support of the Bible thumpers. It's all weird and it's all entertaining. And also, and this is the terrible paradox of it, very, very scary. And I try to make a distinction between the great struggle of the centrist, basically right-wing government of the United States, which is now really Republican and or Democratic, and the fact of this outlier who drags into the political arena and legitimizes this alternate right point of view, the Breitbart point of view, and in fact himself knows absolutely nothing about anything. It's very weird. It's very strange. And by the way, I suspect is not a very wealthy man. He has lots of properties. I'm sure he could collateralize them in some manner. I'm sure that there's money there. But he ain't the guy he says he is. And people who believe in him are identifying personally with his success and somehow psychologically thinking being in that way, being a Trumper, is going to somehow help them be successful. It's a fantasy, and it's a very strong one, and it really cannot be discounted in this peculiar electoral race. Anyway, I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Juan, you're on the air.
Joe, I'm disappointed.
Oh, no!
You know, you're right about Trump not being who he says he is. They say that his supporters are all pretty well-educated, which goes to show there's a difference between education and intelligence. The other thing is, do you remember, when you were a kid, did you ever watch wrestling?
Yeah, sure.
And did you think it was real?
Nope.
I mean, when you were an 8 or 9 year old kid.
No, I guess because I've been informed, I always knew it was a show.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of people who I'm pretty sure think it's real, and our politics has gotten to that level now.
I wouldn't argue with that. I think that you're making an interesting point.
It's the politics. You know, when you start seeing Bush and other leaders in the Republican Party endorsing Hillary Clinton, and you have Democrats calling her a progressive, something's got to give somewhere because she's... You can't have those people endorsing her and her being progressive at the same time.
Well, I think you're making, by the way, a very interesting point. This is an election. This is a totally outlier election. We have never really, in modern times, had a clear, I'm going to use the term Rooseveltian, for lack of a better word, social democratic candidate as a mainstream party candidate in a long, long time. In a long, long time. So, okay. So here we are, always, and this is something that people argue about every election, supporting the what we might think of as the rational choice versus the irrational choice, all of that being really irrelevant to what I think a lot of our audience, and I believe, argue that these two political parties operate within a very tight sphere of support for a system which is, as I have often said, late-stage capitalism with an onrushing sense of imperialism and attempted world dominance, which really is part and parcel of a fascist mindset. Anyway.
Okay, now let me tell you why I'm disappointed.
Okay, tell me why you're disappointed.
When you voted last time, did somebody have a gun to your head?
I hope not. No guns.
Okay, so Jill Stein is going to be on the ballot. She's already on the ballot in 40 states, and she's working to get on the ballot. There's only two that she's going to have to be a write-in candidate in so far.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
And she may be on the ballot in up to 48 states. So if no one's holding a gun to your head and you know that Hillary, you know what you're going to get with Hillary because Trump is not up to the task and no one's holding a gun to your head, you got the chance to vote for the right person. And all you can do is talk about Trump the crazy, hoping that Hillary gets in.
Well, I think I appreciate the irony of what you're saying. I am not prepared to get into a discussion of Jill Stein. I understand what you're saying and why you're saying it. And I'm not saying to people, don't vote for Jill Stein. Be clear on this. I happen to think that the process with an independent left party at this point in American history is not going to happen. But, you know, hey, existentially, whatever, it may well be the thing that many people want to do. It's okay.
It's what we need to do, Joe.
Okay.
How long can we keep getting the least crappy person who's still really crappy and expect to survive?
A good question. I'm not going to answer it. I'll leave our audience to think about it. And I thank you very much for the call.
Take care.
Hey, take care. All right. You know, one of the things that within the next couple of months we're really going to have to do is dissect and look carefully at the two alternate party candidates, the conservative candidates, and Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, and her running mate, and look at their policies and their beliefs and so on, and not just talk about the impossibility of their winning an election. This isn't the day I'm going to do that, but I think that this is something that a lot of you would like, and I think it's worth having a conversation about. I also think that if we do that, we need to invite a representative of each of those two candidates, because I ain't the guy to do it. 231-8187. Who do we got? Karen, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. I wanted to focus on globalization and corporate domination and how that's helped to create Trump and other candidates that are fascistic in orientation.
Uh-huh.
I believe that, and what you said about imperialism, I believe that the reason that people start hating other people who are Latino or Latina or who are black or who are LGBTQ or any other group that there is bias against is when there is a shrinking of economic wealth and good jobs and so on. Mm-hmm. Not to say that we don't have in us that tendency anyway, but it gets really exaggerated when the other looks like the person that's taking away, quotes, your job.
Well, I agree. Let me just insert one thing and then I'll go right back to you. And that is that we have to always remember that the origins of the United States involved the decimation, the destruction of Native American peoples and the denial of their real existence and validity, and the fact of African slavery in this society. These are two marks of incredible evil in our history. And
yeah,
they really do distort our history.
I completely agree with that. And I think that for the gentleman who was saying there would be no difference if Hillary were elected, that gentleman, I'm suspecting, is not a Latino man and is not an LGBTQ person,
mm-hmm.
and is not a woman, because under Trump, every group that has experienced significant bias, and Native Americans included, will only have even more hell to deal with. And he's made it clear. He's talked about putting women in prison who have abortions. He's talked about sending 11 million people out of the country who are Latino and Latina, an agonizing and horrific proposal. He's talked about beating up African-American protesters at his rallies. I just think that we have to look at how we are being divided as human beings, and we've got to really be accountable for our own intrinsic bias as white people,
mm-hmm.
but we also have to be really, really good allies or accomplices, some people like to say, for helping to dismantle all of these battles amongst the people, because the real enemy is really not our Latino or Latina sister and brother, or our African American sister and brother. It's really the corporate powers and the war machine. And I know you know this, but that's.
Oh, I agree with you absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, I really thank you for the call. This has been an interesting discussion so far. We're almost out of time. Do we have time for another caller? We got 1 minute. Who we got? Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Hi.
Thanks for your truth telling and your passion. reality is being upended by ideology and myths, just like when George W., who was an anti-intellectual, tried to privatize the post office in 2006, you know, by putting on this incredible burden of paying for health care costs 75 years in advance.
Yeah, it's still going on, but go ahead.
What we need are countermeasures. We need SROs for affordable housing and radical changes in taxation. And
well, I agree with you, but unfortunately, you and I are out of time.
It's gone.
But thank you very much for the call. An interesting show, and I'll try not to get too trumped up. I'll see you all later.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO's membership drive is coming up in September. Help us promote the work of this amazing station by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now Snapchat, rating our app on the iTunes and Google Play Store, and joining our Facebook event for the upcoming membership drive. Oh, and don't forget to join or renew your membership. Just click donate on our website or app and start your monthly contribution to your community radio, KBOO. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, hear part two of Ralph Nader speaking on progressive matters. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Fadi Saba of the Defending Dissent Foundation explains the latest attack against the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Author Dave Gillespie discusses how duopoly is